Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey, friends.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
How is everybody today?
The Thunderlust is upon us.
Thunderlust is upon us.
Feeling all right. No curveballs tonight, okay? Just like, I'm feeling a little fragile.
No curveballs.
Just don't play.
I can't put you on the spot for
No. I'm fine. We're all fine. Everything's fine here.
I was looking. Yeah.
Quit looking at me.
We're fine. Look at all the people looking at you, though.
Yeah. Stop looking at me.
No. Keep watching. Anyway.
Stop undressing me with your eyes.
With your Thunderlust.
Give me a quarter.
Why would you put me on those clothes?
We're hitting that wacky place pretty early.
Like, yeah. Second time.
Oh my goodness,
we're gonna crash hard.
Just what do you got wait. Tune in next week when we're on the floor.
What do you got for us, Ben Lawrence?
I've got something called Jim Henson's The Storyteller. This was a TV show that was on in the 90s. I hear. I'd actually never heard of this, but apparently Neil Gaiman is getting involved.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those later Jim Henson projects that I think Brian put together. I should have done my research because I don't remember precisely when it aired. I want to say it was on cable, like on HBO or Showtime. Maybe Nicole can look it up. It was a really fascinating show. And there were two. There was the Storyteller series, which was, I think, some original and some traditional fairy tales. But then there's a second series I don't think a lot of people are familiar with that was actually Greek myths. Mm-hmm. And they put them all out on DVD about 10 years ago. And I need to go back and rewatch them all because I thought it was a fascinating show. But I don't have very clear recollections about it. Did you find it?
Well, I don't know when it happened because that's not in the article that I have up here, but it says that for those unfamiliar, The Storyteller was a retelling of various European folk stories, mm-hmm. just as you said, populated with giants and white lions and other various beasts brought mm-hmm. to life by the Creature Shop from Jim Henson. It was narrated by a mysterious little elfin storyteller played by John Hurt.
Right, and he had this shaggy dog.
Yeah.
And he sat around the fire and Hurt in his elfin or dwarfish makeup and costume and told these stories, and it was just...
It was 1987 to 1989.
Dude. 87 to 89.
Dude, that was...
Nothing was happening around that time. It was
perfect. Do you recall when it was... what was originally broadcast on? Was it...
I'm going to say ABC, because that was what Jim... That's what the Muppets were on, was ABC. I'm just going to say he...
Okay.
Oh, cable?
Right. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you know...
Oh, right, like USA or something like that?
No.
Anyway, that's a little detail we don't need to concern ourselves with right now.
We'll
but apparently, Neil Gaiman is bringing up he's going to do a new series.
Yeah,
he says it'll begin in a northern kingdom where stories are forbidden and will have an interactive quality between the storyteller and the stories.
So it's worth mentioning Archaea or Boom or mm-hmm. Boom Archaea because they merged. They did a bunch of Jim Henson storytellers, but they would do a 4-issue series, and it would be storyteller dragons, storyteller witches,
fairies, giants,
and but they still used him as a framing device.
Got it.
And there's some beautiful artists throughout mm-hmm. it, so they're worth checking out in case you have that nostalgic itch you want to scratch.
Well, my favorite one of those properties that they did was the graphic novel adaptation of Jim Henson's Tale of Sand, which was this mm-hmm. obscure screenplay, very surreal film that he tried to get produced. And if y'all had an opportunity to go to the MoPop Muppets exhibit, they actually had, this is 2 years ago now, I can't remember how long ago it was, but they actually had a couple of his short films that were looping that I had never seen before. You know, that's really what he wanted to do as a creator. He really wasn't into puppets so much. He wanted to make these bizarre, ultra-creative, surreal type of films. That was his goal. And then he wound up, you know, making the local Muppet TV show, and his career blossomed from there, and he created a community around all that. So, yeah, it's really interesting that his work just keeps evolving and inspiring people. And, of course, the combination of Neil Gaiman and this property is just like the best of all possible things.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, IMDb does not have what channel it was on. But anyway, let's move on. So look for The Storyteller coming to a channel near you, or look for the comics, apparently.
Yeah. It's going to be on a streaming platform. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah, and probably.
It's probably going to be on the Disney streaming platform, and we're going to have to pay good money for it.
The war will begin.
All right. So,
begun the streaming war has.
Donny Cates has been writing the current run of Venom, and apparently after the contents of number 11, he's been receiving death and injury threats. Comic fans, stop it with the death threats already.
What was it that he did that set him off?
Yeah, I read it, but it doesn't make sense because there is some kid, Dylan, who's like actually his son and not his half-brother.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And then also fans ship that Brock and the symbiote have a romantic relationship.
That's from the movie, I think people
it's feel. Like some Slash situations going on that yeah. But I don't know. So, I don't understand why death has to come into this. I don't know.
I don't get it, but Donny Cates tweeted, he just saw that he's received multiple death injury threats over number 11. So a few things. Number one, I'm not changing my plans for these characters. Number two, threatening my life or injury to me is not the way to champion your cause. And three, shipping is fine, but this is insane. And I'm an old dude. I didn't even realize what shipping meant, but it's like placing two people in a relationship.
Yeah.
So number 11 makes some major changes to the Lethal Protector's status quo. Dylan, the young boy who Eddie Brock recently discovered is his half-brother, was revealed to be his actual son. Eddie also learned the Venom symbiote has been altering his memories for years, resulting in his sister and uncle, who he believed had cancer, not being real. Along with Eddie's own cancer. So I guess this is just people who that's want right. the canon of the movie to stay in
is
the
that what
comics?
It is? Oh. I don't know. This is comics, though. It's like, you know, when you're grinding out a story once a month, and also when you're trying to make do with back material that other people have contributed to for decades and try to shape it your own creatively, you know, this is what you do in comics. It's the...
I'm going to give credit to having the symbiote change memories to explain away the whole stupid cancer story. That's actually a smart
I don't have any interest in reading the stories, but all those ideas that Ben just rattled off from the article, I'm like, hey, that's fun thinking. I think those stories sound really interesting because I don't care about that character. Sorry,
but
my
apparently
life now too.
Other people
and
really do.
Really, the people who really like the Tom Hardy movie.
Yeah, that's okay for them.
Yeah, the Donny Cates run has been selling really well, so I think this is probably just some.
You think he just got one, like Donny Cates, or like one dude was like, "You suck," and he's like, "Well, I'm receiving death threats."
Yeah, he probably got a couple, but this is still just those unanimous trolls that you know. Right. It's like, whatever. Yeah. You're still buying the issues, aren't you?
Yep. Yeah. You're still gonna be buying the comic
you're
book.
You're angry reading them, aren't you?
Oh, angry reading.
If they want the shipping, they're hangry right. reading at that point.
So that's basically, I mean, we run into this every once in a while, and I hate to bring it up because I don't want to, like, focus on the negative aspect of comic book fandom.
Help perpetuate the
Well, I don't think we're helping their cause at all, but, you know, I like to stay positive every once in a while, and talking about this kind of thing just kind of bums me out.
Yes.
But it is a part of comic book fan culture, unfortunately, and, you know, I don't know if there's a way that, you know, something we can do to help champion that not
just
happening.
Put your phone down and then just yell in your car or the privacy of your own home like everyone else does.
You know what? If you don't like it, you can stop reading the comic book.
Oh no, free will. It's the destroyer of all things.
It's a challenge, but that is an option, and sometimes it's the best.
It's hard for nerds to stop, though. Yeah, I mean, I did that dance with Batwoman for so long, and it hurt.
Yeah, but you know, Nicole, I was really proud of you because you grew from that experience.
I did. I didn't collect those last two issues. Yeah, I said, enough, Kate.
Too
last. This is abusive.
All right, so anyway, another shot has been fired in the oncoming streaming wars. The purge is complete. Jessica Jones and The Punisher have been canceled by Netflix.
But we knew it was coming.
We knew it was coming. There was just no official word
yet. They'll just get picked up again.
I guess I was surprised that they went as far as, like, they did the second season of Iron Fist. They did the second season of Punisher. And I was like, what, are you teasing us? Are you fulfilling your contractual obligations? You know, sadly, I have not watched the second season of Punisher. I keep forgetting that the second season of Iron Fist even exists.
I started watching it. It's better than one.
Okay.
But right. I mean, the problem is the person they cast for Danny Rand. He just is like, he doesn't have any character growth.
Right.
And he sort of doesn't too. Like, he actually like smiles and he like, he like does other things besides brooding and being like, meh, I was in a monastery for a long time. And it was hard, you know. It's just like, he's like, oh yeah, I can like make jokes and like live a life. And it's like, ah, that's nice.
So, I'm like in the middle of Punisher season one. I haven't even watched, I've watched all, but, or only two episodes of Iron Fist. But the third season of Jessica Jones is in the can. It does not have a release date yet, but that will be the swan song for the Marvel Netflix shows on Netflix. There's rumor that they may land in at Hulu or FX, but because of like certain contract language, nobody at Marvel can't do anything with those characters for 2 years, so there will be some time between now and when we see them again. So there you go. Cole, I put this one in here for you because I know that how much you love Todd McFarlane, but McFarlane Toys picked up DC Comics' 6-inch action figure license.
I saw that.
What do you think of that?
Well,
don't look too hard, they'll break.
I have not bought a McFarlane toy, a McFarlane action figure, for a long, long time. And also, I still have some of them on my shelves, but I also have many, 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 many in plastic tubs that have not aged well, being out of the light in a cold, dry space. So, you know, I've gone off on the, you know, the way his company produced toys that had the appearance of being high quality, but it were actually super low quality, brittle plastic, toys that were multi-jointed and incredibly detailed that within a month or more, they broke at the joints and you can't even glue them back together, and stuff like that. So a lot of these toys were not designed to be taken out and posed on the shelf. Now, that's been a while, but I got to tell you, I have not, I am more intrigued by companies like NECA that are producing toys of a similar caliber and detail, but actually are more durable, though my King Kong figure did break while we were shooting.
My last two Predator toys broke, so about that durability, I don't know.
Well, you know, is it a question of the quality of the products they're using to make them, or is it just the fact that they're trying to do too many cool things with too small an object?
Too small an object, because mostly it's the Predator features, like all of his weapons. Like they're just so tiny and pointy that they just like snap the moment you take them out of the plastic. Okay. So,
all right. So maybe that's not something I should be uber critical of McFarlane Toys over.
I haven't been impressed with what Mattel's been doing currently. I have a Batwoman that she looks pretty decent. Her face application for her Kate head is really flat. It's like what Hasbro did, like, 6 years ago or something, had really flat painted faces. So, her joints are loose, like she's always falling over and stuff like that. So I don't know that McFarlane's going to be any better, but she'll look prettier. I mean, I have to prop them up pretty hardcore and like try to get some good stands and stuff. So I may still have to do that with the McFarlane line.
I am curious of why they went to McFarlane when Hasbro is, does not Warner own Hasbro, or who owns somebody? But
oh God, that's it's deep like, into
but also
there.
You gotta kind of got
Illuminati
wonder,
owns
like,
it all.
You know, this was part of a bidding. This is part of a bidding war or a bidding proposals, and so that meant that McFarlane had the low pitch, and McFarlane has always low pitched whatever they do, and maybe that goes back to my my original criticism of, you know, poor products that there are, poor materials that they're using, cheapy plastic, whatever.
See, I generally consider the DC Direct stuff to be kind of lowish quality. Maybe not necessarily in breakability, but they just don't ever look that great.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Their choice of their joints are always weird. Like, Harley has some weird cankles going on this week.
Her face is terrifying. Yeah. Did you look at that face?
I looked at that face, yeah.
Oh,
it was
God.
Done on purpose, too.
So, it's the DC Collectibles line, and they also have, like, our super beefy Nightwing, too, which looks kind of weird.
Yeah.
I bought the one, I pick up a lot of them at thrift stores to resell on eBay, but I know the only one I bought for myself in recent years was DC Universe, was the, you know, the Frank Miller Batman, because I have a DC Direct Dark Knight Robin, Carrie. That was her name. Yeah. And I was like, well, I can't afford to get the DC Direct Dark Knight Batman. Oh, but look, DC Universe. And I got it, and it was such a shabby looking thing. He was bulky. He was not Frank Miller Dark Knight Batman. He was bulky, you know. Quarterback Batman figure. He got his
gains and
but there was no detailing. The detailing was flat. He didn't.
I don't know. I still miss the DC Universe stuff.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
From, like,
I should have given you my Batman.
What were you going to say, Chris? I cut you off a little while ago. Was there more that you wanted to say about the figures?
What I'm curious about though is that. What McFarlane will do stylistically, will he go for uber detail and like modern and like stylized, or will he try to be just like clean and simple?
Mm-hmm. All this says is quote ultra posable.
Well, everything's ultra posable. Except unless you're buying something from Super 7, which the charm of those little 3¾-inch figures that do is that they are an absence of detail. They're tiny. And they are hearkening back to the figures of the 70s.
In action figures.
Yeah, they've got like 4 points of articulation. But
they're all in the neck.
I've had to buy a couple. just because it's like the Metropolis Diana figure.
Yeah.
I got you for Christmas, and I got one for myself as well. It's like, I had to have that. That's just so weird.
Am I not supposed to play with that? Is that just a collectible thing?
Oh,
is that not
what you want to do?
Have I taught you nothing?
Oh. That's
you must pose them. You must pose them.
I heard pose with them. Oh my God.
That is also true.
Is there collectible action figures not meant to be toys? Mm-hmm. Is that a delineated market from toys? Like, when you buy something from the store and it's like, it's not meant to be taken out of the box, is that obvious to somebody who doesn't know these things?
I don't think so. But I think by law, all of them, regardless of the detail and the doodads and accoutrements, they have to have the sticker on that says, you know, not for, not...
Choking hazards.
Yeah, choking hazard and not for children under the age of 4 or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really good question. I've been collecting action figures for so long, I didn't even stop to consider it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I don't have children, so yeah. And I don't really play with them.
I mean, they try.
Because my internal life is a dead thing.
Things like the DC ones and the Marvel Legends and stuff like that, they have such a high price point for being like... a mainstream product that it is hard for kids to get them. I mean,
grandma's not going to buy that for Christmas.
When they're like 20, 25 bucks, you know, it's hard to say like, here, 7-year-old, take this thing and just go crazy with it.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can play with it, or you can just be like, yes, I'm going to post my action figures and I take photography and post it on Instagram.
God, that was perfect. You are perfect.
That's because that's my life. Actually, I take my husband's photography because his is way better than mine. So if you see any of that on Instagram, it's fine.
I was going to be like, I was going to start taking more pictures of Transformers, but now I don't know.
You should. I'm only making fun because it's my truth.
I am all about documenting what you have. And like, that's a project for you, sir. It's like, just set up a little photo booth, like a little like,
Light box.
A light box. Yeah. But and take a picture of one of your action figures.
Light boxes can be like 15 bucks or less.
Do you have any idea how many action figures Cole
has? I do. I've been to his apartment.
Yeah. Yep.
So why do you suggest that?
I don't know. I'll give him something to do.
Because he doesn't. Because Ben doesn't think I have enough to do with my time.
Well, you watched the Spirit twice in a row, so
I was stoned, man.
You could do two things at once. You could watch the thing 3 times in a row while taking photos.
Yeah, man, multitask.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't just think the Spirit deserves a third sitting. But anyway.
All right. I'm sure we talk about toys all the time, and we'll come back to that. Let's move on.
All right,
the final thing today. I sent this link out to you guys a while ago, but this promotion is still up. You can win a comic book store
now.
That is free.
The most atrocious concept. I'm like, why would?
The industry is so bad, we're just giving them away, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Please, take my store.
So, silly, sweet little dream, but do you know what big can of stinky, you know...
I'm sure they do. That's why.
So
whale
it's
poop
a,
you're getting yourself
into. It's a
whale poop.
It's a promotion.
It's colossal.
It's a promotion from Chimera Comics. I don't know where they're able to find that soon enough. And
was
basically,
it Chicago or something?
It's it's like in the suburb of Chicago. And he's basically both of you actually, I'm sure, love this. Have you ever wanted to own your own comic book store? Have you thought, quote, if only I knew where to start, or if only I had the money? Are you tired of making decisions in your life based on fear? What if I told you I'm going to take that fear away? I'm going to give away a once in a lifetime head start. I'm going to give away an entire comic book
store.
And
then it's just, he's trying to get a sucker.
Oh,
sucker fishing.
Look at this countdown, guys. The contest ends in 0 days, 2 hours, 18 minutes, 44 seconds.
Oh,
he's using fear. Yeah.
Wow. So as we record this, there's 2 hours and 18 minutes left in this thing. I'm wondering if anybody signed up.
How did you put yourself in contending? Are you supposed to write an essay or something like that?
I did look that.
I think you just
have to enter.
Yeah, tell me. So you have to just write him as like a small essay that what you think makes a good comic book store. A great comic book store.
Right.
He says, I'm giving away the local comic shop, the inventory, the fixtures, the goodwill, the customer base, 6 years of history. It can all be yours. Think Charlie and the Chocolate Factory without the Oompa Loompas, apparently. So
No deal.
I
burst through the sky in an elevator.
I just think that sounds like a nightmare. I'm sorry. I don't think it's whoever is bless their hearts, whoever's so naive that they think that's gonna be a workable plan. But I hope they have some kind of retail experience and
this guy's probably just gonna dump a bunch of credit debt on whoever wins this comic book store.
There's gotta be a dark side to this.
Dead inventory.
The contest ends either in 2 hours and 13 minutes from now, or when he receives 2,000 applications. And since the countdown is still going, I'm assuming that he has not received 2,000 applications.
Yeah.
I wanna follow this story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I
want to
know where this goes.
Absolutely.
Follow continually for like the next year, and then they see the interviews with the person. Like, I don't know what I was doing.
They slowly just look like
a nightmare.
Decades older.
Wheelbarrows of spawn. Wheelbarrows of spawn.
Pennies on the pound.
All right. So I'll put that in the show notes. You can follow along, too. You can't enter because the deadline is approaching quickly. So anyway, let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Cole Hornaday, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, I read this graphic novel by Ezra Clayton Daniels called Upgrade Soul. I kept seeing it pop up on many readers' best of 2018, though I think it was published sooner than that because it got a 2017 Duane McDuffie Award for diversity in comics. Can you see the cover?
Yeah.
You're peeking it. This is probably one of the most well-written, sophisticated, what Alan Moore called sophisticated suspense, what Harlan Ellison called speculative fiction. It is probably one of the best science fiction stories I have read, and I cannot remember when. And one of the reasons why it's so successful is it's beautifully drawn. The characters are finely tuned. The social the social issues that it draws up and explores are dense and layered, and the pacing is just impeccable. So basically, it's the story of this elderly couple, Hank and Molly, and they're both relatively wealthy and well-to-do in their industry. Hank is heir to a pulp superhero franchise that his father created. So he has lots and lots of money, but he's a failed scientist, so he's always looking for opportunity to invest in something. And Molly was actually a geneticist. And they're in, like, I don't recall if they established how old they are, but they are in their 70s. So they are approached by this scientist who wants to perform this experimental procedure called Upgrade Cell. And basically what it is a cloning process where they'll produce a new body for you, and your identity will be transferred into the body. It goes wrong, and the bodies that come out of the chamber are these basically potato people. who have their own consciousness that is an engram or taken from the original template, but they start evolving and being their own people. And so it's this fascinating study of diverging personalities coming from the same source. And I don't want to get too deep into the story because I know I'm going to screw it up in trying to recount it because it is fascinating.
And that's a thick book.
Yeah, it is a very, very thick book, and it's a very, very dense story, and it's well worth your time. Now, one of the things that gets talked about in a lot of the reviews was that it's that kind of made me curious is that as a science fiction story, a couple of critics said that it explored elder abuse. And I couldn't figure out, you know, I really had to stop and think about where does the elder abuse come in? Well, it comes in where the finances are concerned, because these are two elderly people that had a lot of money and they were offered something really extraordinary that's basically life extension or immortality. And the experiment goes wrong and to a certain extent, but it's burning through all their finances. So are sort of caught up in this cycle of funneling money into this experiment that really isn't going to go the way that they thought it was, and it's depleting their resources. So that is where the elder abuse comes in. They're not physically abused. They may be emotionally abused by other sources that are happening, but that's the big point of abuse right there, and something that I didn't really consider as an aspect of the story while I was reading it. And it was good to go back and check in with that. I highly recommend this. Daniels is an extraordinary storyteller, and this could be, I used to feel that saying adapting this to film would be an insult to the source material, but you know what? This is the kind of science fiction story that would change people's minds. If it's done well, if it honors the material, this would be an extraordinary miniseries or even a film, and it would impact people's what people think about beauty, about intelligence, about identity. It's a really challenging story, and I got a lot out of it.
Cool. Upgrade Soul?
Upgrade Soul.
Thank you, Cole. All right. Nicole, what do you got for us?
I was wondering if you'd pick me next because I'm going to bring the sophistication word.
Oh, good job, kid.
And review Halicious, A Delightful Tale in Hell by Alan C. Medina and Mina L. Well. I think they co-write it. And art by Kit Wallace, color by Gio Butler, and lettering by Micah Myers. And this has a mixture of like a Roman dirge and Jonan Vasquez feel with like a Scotty Young whimsicalness, like I Hate Fairyland, with a young girl who is the granddaughter of Satan. And she is a young reaper where she's helping bring the souls, you know, from death into hell. And she's obsessed with this goth band guy named Briggy Bundy. And she's counting down the days until he will come to hell. Like, his whole persona is to be, like, dark and evil and mysterious, and he wears manliner, and, you know, it's all the things that you would want in a dark boy. And it turns out that was all, like, a facade, but she's, like, so into, like, bringing him that she makes him die accidentally and brings him down to hell, and he's not supposed to be there, so she's trying to, like, find a way to keep him in hell. Meanwhile, like, keeping it away from her mom and all this stuff. And this is just volume one, so they go through all kinds of shenanigans to get there, and there's a little more, you know, a little cliffhanger at the end there of just like, ruh-roh, it's not working. So it's fun, it's popcorn, it's ridiculous, it's stupid, and I just love it. It's just a lot of fun. So Halicious, welcome to hell, Briggy Bundy. It's delightful. If you're missing some I Hate Fairyland, you may like this. I mean, it's not a one-to-one, but it's really close. It's in the same wheelhouse. Cherry is the little girl's name.
I missed it. Is this a standalone or a trade collection?
It's volume one. Okay. It came out in single issues.
Okay.
Who is it published by? It's published by SBI Press. So that tells you right there a little bit. If you're familiar with that press. Because don't they do like Satan Baby or whatever that thing was?
Stabity Bunny, maybe?
They do Stabity Bunny. They just do ridiculous dark things. Like, you know, slave labor used to do stuff like that. Now they're kind of running through that kind of stuff. So if you want something stupid.
The torch has been passed.
Absolutely.
All right.
And I mean that in the nicest way possible. I really do. I really enjoyed this book.
Cool. Hellicious. Thank you, Nicole. Yeah. And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got?
I thought I would talk briefly about the Battle Angel Alita movie, or Alita Battle Angel, or whatever they read.
Yeah, Alita Battle Angel. Yeah,
that confused me.
So I've been waiting for this movie for more than 15 years, so I think I was going to like it even if it was a steaming pile of poop. It was not, so that's nice. It condenses a good chunk of the books and the anime and takes characters from the anime that weren't in the book and put them in the movie. So it's kind of like a new third reality. And but tonally, it got everything I wanted out of it. Robert Rodriguez as the director was a good choice. That man knows how to make violence look pretty.
Yeah.
And James Cameron's been working on this technology to make this look crisp and clean and like a reality, not just a bunch of CGI monstrosities. I was a little sad just that there's certain things that, like, I get why they couldn't be there, but they weren't there. Like, the main threat is kind of a alternate version of the first villain in the books. And the first villain is unique because he has like a worm body and he eats people's brains and has existential crisis and everything. This one's just Jackie Earl Haley as a big beefy robot. And it's just like, okay, that's what you got.
He's like, I'm gonna beat you. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's
he has
like
no real
thing.
Motivation yeah. other than like, I work for the master. And the master is, Edward Norton. And, that is the nice thing. So in the later books, one of the main villain that pushes the series, the main antagonist is a scientist named Nova. And you get to see him a lot in this movie, or at least his voice. And then you get to see Edward Norton as him. And they will make me cry if he is not obsessed with flan. Because the character, as evil as he is obsessed with eating flan during all his monologues. And it's just like, I love this guy. The main actress, Rosa Salazar, she's fantastic. She sells the entire thing perfectly. Christoph Waltz was great. I love Jennifer Connelly no matter what. Mahershala Ali, he was that character. Like, he looked exactly like that character. I always like Ed Skrein as well. He just makes a good creepy villain. And Jackie Earl Haley, I didn't even realize it was Jackie Earl Haley until like I saw in the credits. I'm like, really? Who? Oh, what? Computer effects. Wow.
Yeah.
It did sell me quite a bit when the world features a lot of bounty hunters that are all cyborgs and have different gimmicks. And in the books, there's an old man who has like four robotic dogs that they like the brains of the dogs are the original dogs, but they have cyber bodies. And so they go to the bar and you see the dogs and it's like, it's him. So you know, very minor role, but it's just like dogs. Yes, yeah. Go for it. It's a 2-hour movie. I was a little worried that like it wasn't too long for me, but I was worried for general audiences it might be. And it has bombed in the States technically. Of its $170 million budget, it made like $125 million. But they just released into China this weekend and they jumped all the way to $270 million. So it's made its money back. It's in the pluses.
Cool.
Pretty sure there'll be a sequel. Don't even think it matters. I think once James Cameron wants a thing, the rich man will get the thing.
Thank you, rich man. You won't hear me say that often.
It just so happened this is thing I want too.
Yes.
Stars align.
Yeah. So I do highly recommend it. If you just want really good sci-fi with interesting world building, it's a beautiful looking film. And
cool.
It's good.
Alita: Battle Angel. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Chris. And that's Book Report. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumpers. You everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street or in beautiful downtown Waterford, or 24 hours a day. So now that I'm trying to act, I can screw up all the words I have to say. Or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, our questions come to us from Mr. Cole Hornaday.
What?
Yeah. Every time you do that to me, every time. I'm not going to fall for it until you actually do forget.
Then it would be tragic, and I would be doing a lot of stuttering. Okay, this is this quiz time is devoted to fantastical nannies. Fantastical nannies. Nope, Mary Poppins does not appear in this quiz time at all.
Fananies?
Oh, you just had to go and make it special, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I don't know why I chose this theme. It just struck me that nannies have been a thing in fantasy literature since forever, and I should, you know, devote some trivia to it. But no, seriously, no Mary Poppins in this
at
all.
Is Mary Poppins cool? Yeah.
She cool.
He's cool.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the new one. I really want to.
I'm just talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, okay. All right. Never mind. I'm going to roll on now. Okay. So, the first question, she was one of the original Salem, Massachusetts witches to be put on trial. She somehow survived and later became a significant figure in Marvel continuity. She protected Franklin Richards as his nanny and notably mentored Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch, in Real Magic. She was eventually killed by Wanda, but later returned as Wanda's disembodied spirit mentor.
Agatha Harkness?
Agatha Harkness.
Wow, well done.
Agatha was created by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, first appearance in Fantastic Four number 94 in January of 1970. This childcare specialist was a sweet, gentle Newfoundland owned by the Darling family.
Aww.
And tasked with looking after their children, Wendy, John, and Michael. When not providing comfort for the kids, she's often cleaning, putting toys away, or helping the children get ready for bed. Loyalty is one of her greatest attributes, in addition to her beautiful brown coat, gentle blue eyes, and cute nursemaid hat.
I don't know what the
name is. Is this the dog from Peter Pan?
You get half point. Yes, it's Nana from Peter Pan.
I was going to say Nanny.
Nana, the darling children. Let's see. Nana and the Darling Children first appeared in Peter Pan, in the stage play called Peter Pan or The Boy Who Wouldn't Grow Up, which premiered on December 27th, my birthday, in 1904. Barry later adapted and expanded the play's storyline as a novel published in 1911 as Peter and Wendy.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, the name Wendy first appeared in literature in Peter Pan.
I think you are right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that catches people off guard is that it was first a play, you know, and then there's a series of novels, and then there was a series of plays, too. I think there are like three plays. But
wow.
Next up, a longtime member of the Great Lakes Avengers, this talented nanny has a penchant for defeating some of the Marvel Universe's greatest villains, including Dr. Doom, MODOK, Terax, and Thanos, making her the best nanny for Danielle, the love child of Luke Cage and Jessica Jones.
Doreen.
Squirrel Girl.
That's
Squirrel
right.
Girl was created by Will Murray and Steve Ditko and made her debut appearance in Marvel Super Heroes Volume 2, Number 8 in the winter of 1991. Mm-hmm. This technologically advanced caregiver was originally a scientist and inventor who made major advances in the development of cyborg technology. Sealed in an egg-like cyber suit against her will, she was tasked by the anti-mutant organization known as The Right to slay mutants. Later, she and her partner, the Orphan Maker, declared they were the saviors of mutant children, snatching them from their birth parents who they deemed evil.
I have no idea.
It's not Granny. It's
you are so close, and it's really obvious.
It's Nanny?
It's the Nanny.
It's Nanny.
The Nanny.
The Nanny was created by Walt and Louise Simonson, first appeared in X Factor number 17 in June of 1987. Okay, the last one's a little bit long-winded. I apologize. This film is set in 1880 Victorian England and presented the story of Cedric Brown, a hard-working widower who can't spend much time with his seven children, so he leaves them in the care of nannies. However, the children are very naughty and have managed to, with pride, scare the past 17 nannies away. Running out of options, Mr. Brown heeds a mysterious voice and voices advice and calls upon a magical hag-like woman with a crooked cane and a habit for appearing out of nowhere, though she does mention that she did knock. Though initially physically unattractive, this nanny grows progressively more beautiful as the family she cares for become better people. Name that nanny and her eponymous motion picture. This is a tough one, I know.
No idea.
Nanny McPhee. starred Emma Thompson and Colin Firth. It was particularly kind of confusing about this is Emma Thompson adapted the screenplay from a series of books by Christiana Brand called Nurse Matilda. The book series is published in the 60s, and Thompson said the lead character's name was changed for a few reasons, namely one, because the term nurse was a different term for nanny and nobody would get it, and the other was because they didn't want to use Matilda due to the similar name in Roald Dahl's book, which is also a musical.
Has the Baba Yaga ever been a nanny before? Because that's what I was thinking.
I was just going to scream like, Baba Yaga as an answer.
Just have Baba Yaga show up and everything will be solved.
Yeah. She comes with her own house.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. And her flying pestle. Pestle. All right. And that's quiz time.
Cool. Well, thank you, Cole. And thank you for listening and or watching. And we will see you next week.